Welcome, everybody, to today's briefing. As I'm sure everybody knows, tomorrow's submissions close for the Draft New Zealand Energy Strategy and Draft New Zealand Energy Efficiency and Conservation Strategy, which aims to set our government's direction for energy in the coming years and the role that energy will have in New Zealand's economy. The document fits energy within government's stated goal of growing New Zealand's economy, and among the priorities mentioned are the development of New Zealand's petroleum and mineral resources and the target that 90% of New Zealand's electricity be generated renewably by 2025. So today we have Tim Davin, Director of Policy at IPENS, and Associate Professor Bob Lloyd, Director of the Energy Studies Program at the Department of Physics at the University of Otago, talking to us. Tim's worked in local government, NGO, and consulting sectors, and at IPENS he has worked on a range of technically related public policy issues, including the infrastructure sector. In March this year, IPENS actually released a report, rather, called Electricity Generation Achieving New Zealand's Objectives, which discusses exactly this sort of thing. Bob came to New Zealand in 2002 after having worked for the Australian Cooperative Research Centre for Renewable Energy based at Murdoch University in Perth. He's also worked on renewable energy systems in China and the Pacific Islands, and his current research interests lie in energy conservation and residential housing and energy management, including world energy resources and peak oil. Right, so Tim, over to you.
Okay. First of all, in commenting on the two on the two strategies, we raised the first issue about is there really any point in having two strategies? And I'm not sure originally why there were two strategies, but it seems to me when you're looking through them that there's considerable amount of duplication. There's at least three objective areas that overlap, and so there doesn't seem to be much sense in that. It seems to me also it promotes this silo effect of government agencies, the Ministry of Economic Development and ECA and the Electricity Authority. It also results in different approaches. In one area they're called areas of focus, and one area they're called objectives, and the NZX actually has some targets and the energy strategy doesn't have targets. So it seems to me both in terms of overall strategic thinking and in terms of administrative processes, that they should actually be combined into one strategy to provide an overall government approach to energy. Turning to the next one, which is the discussion on the 90% target. As was mentioned by Amy, I think we've done some work on this earlier this year, and we've had a re-look at it in light of the recent information. And if you assume that all the work that's currently under construction is completed and all consented projects are built, and then add on to the end of that everything else is wind, the result we come up with is that by 2025, only 68% will be biorenewables. We've then looked at the scenarios developed by the Electricity Commission called the SOO scenarios, or Statement of Opportunity scenarios, and this shows that are two scenarios that approach 90% renewables. And when you look at the details of these, we think they result in quite unrealistic arrangements. One of them requires three-quarters of Huntly Station to be shut down, and that's widely regarded by many as the current cornerstone of the New Zealand energy generation, and also requires about 500 megawatts, which is about 5% of New Zealand's energy generation, going off stream when in response to prices. The other scenario also requires half of Huntly to be cut down and two major gas plants. So they require quite a dramatic shift away from thermal energy in favour of wind to achieve them, and the very scale of those indicates to us that it's probably unlikely. This is particularly for the New Zealand situation, where electricity generation incentives are driven by the wholesale electricity market, and there's no overt government intervention in the forms of generation that are chosen. So currently, under existing arrangement, we think it's unlikely, and even if a whole lot of wind comes on, we also think it's unlikely. On the one hand, government's chosen a target. On the other hand, it seems to us they're not doing anything to achieve the target, so it seems rather incongruous. Moving on to our next point, which is on new technologies. There's comment made in the discussion document that needs to be focused on our resource strengths, and we're currently having some debate amongst our members, recognising our submissions currently in the draft format, as to what those technologies might be. For example, for photovoltaics, there's some arguments to say that New Zealand isn't the best place for that. We're not a Saudi Arabia, so should we be doing much research in those areas? And in the marine side, New Zealand's natural resources are more along the wave energy rather than tidal energy, so should we be doing any research in the tidal side? And of course, a number of our members have different perspectives on that. One of the problems for New Zealand is a lot of these emerging technologies are uneconomic, and under the wholesale energy market incentives are unlikely to be a significant part of our energy mix in the future. We also highlight the fact that this government's promoting research has to be linked to industry and have a strong commercialisation focus. This energy strategy needs to recognise that new direction of government research initiatives. Moving on to the next slide, which is on reliable electricity supply. Essentially, New Zealand's electricity supply, we're vulnerable to wind and rain, much more so than many other countries. And there is an immediate problem up to 2014, and in 2014, the HVDC link between the two islands creates a lot more capacity. But up to that point, there's some severe concerns, particularly if we have a dry winter, and these have been reported on by the Electricity Commission. But after that, as we increase our wind technology, New Zealand becomes more and more reliant on peaking plants being built, and there were some announcements only made last week by Contact that they did see a big future for peaking plants. Essentially, in a dry winter, sometimes the wind stops blowing, so you need to have thermal peakers available. And the big question is, deliver those sort of peakers? Will it provide enough income source for those generators to build those peaking plants? And then, in a more wider way, gas has got some problems at the moment, and there hasn't been an identified new gas resource yet. Wind has a number of issues, particularly with resource consents and growing community opposition. And hydro, of course, has now the hydro projects are getting harder, and there's more and more environmental concerns about them. So our whole future choices about some of our generation options is getting more difficult. Moving on to the next slide, which is the one headed up energy efficient transport. What's interesting here is that the previous transport strategy was developed by the previous government, and the only public transport policy this government has been the transport government policy statement. And it's interesting to see that we find targets for transport in an energy strategy and not in a transport strategy. And as a consequence, the New Zealand Energy Efficiency and Conservation Strategy has relatively few initial initiatives. They just reference the current policy around biofuels, electric vehicles won't have to pay road user charges, and fuel economy labelling is coming in. But that's about it. As I mentioned before, the government policy statement in 2009 said we're moving too quickly on modal shift, which we thought was a relatively strange comment. And when you look at it in terms of energy consumption, modal shift to public transport, walking and cycling is a significant initiative for energy efficiency, and yet the government in 2009 was going in the opposite direction. So we'd like to see an energy transport strategy that reflects and parallels the work going on in this energy efficiency conservation strategy. My next slide is on homes. And here we do support insulation and home making tools. They've been previously looked upon as being rather paternalistic, but we think they're a very important part of reducing future demand of energy. There's also no mention of the need to promote hot water heat pumps, and in our view, they've got a number of advantages over hot water solar hot water heaters. They're more efficient, they're more cost-effective, and less prone to installation problems, and we think the government needs to recognise those strengths. We also think it understands the role of clean wood burners. Domestic wood burners for space heating provide about 500 megawatts of electricity equivalent in New Zealand. They're a significant part of our demand, and we think they need to be promoted by government in order to provide locally resourced energy supplies. Looking at energy efficiency products, these are much more cost-effective than new generation, and in terms of reducing future demand, we think the government should be much more firmer about these things. So far, all the government's gone for is labelling and consumer information to try and educate and inform consumers, and we think they need to be far stronger than this because of the significant benefits they have in reducing demand. We think they should introduce stronger regulation on inefficient products. Part of this, in terms of reducing demand, is the time-use tariff, smart meters and smart appliances, and we think the government should actively promote those. That's the only way we'll get significant shifts in behaviour when people know how much they're paying for their electricity. So, in summary, that's really our perspective. We think the government could strengthen up the strategy in a number of ways. It's been highlighted by some of our members this week, in fact, that the strategy doesn't actually use the word sustainability in any way. And while you can argue that many of the individual initiatives have a sustainability outcome, we think the concept of sustainability should be more widely integrated into the strategy. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Tim. Bob, I'm going to, I'm just unmuting you quickly, and I'm going to pass over to you. You should be, there you go, you should be able to speak now.
Can I speak? Does everyone hear me?
We can.
You can all hear me. Okay, I'm going to give a talk. About half of the talk is an ideological opposition to the new energy strategy, which I think is a major step backwards from the past policy. And the second one is a more substantive criticism based upon, in fact, an assignment I set my students recently. I teach a course on energy policy, and I set one of the questions to be looking at the new energy strategy of the government. Right, so foreword. The foreword, as Amy has correctly said, emphasises economic growth and the fact that energy can give that growth. And as I said there, that the government could almost have said that even if it means sacrificing the environment. I'm not sure if people know, but the world has not increased its oil consumption now for the last 5 years, going on 6 years. The prospect of future continuing growth at 3.2% per annum is looking increasingly unlikely. If this doesn't happen, then there are going to be major economic and other problems. As the government correctly says, energy means growth, and if you don't have energy, then you don't have growth. And on a world scale, world energy is not increasing. At least oil is not increasing. Next slide. Okay, again, this is an ideological point that the government's position is that growth will help the poor by creating wealth for all. It's the so-called trickle-down theory. However, this theory is shown to be incorrect, both internationally and nationally. The sort of the the comic of this slide doesn't quite come across, because it should come up one and then the other. So the trickle-down effect doesn't work, both in terms of the international poor of the world, but also in terms of New Zealand. New Zealand has one of the most unequal societies in the world. Some of you might have read the book The Spirit Level, which indicates that New Zealand is up there with Portugal and the US in terms of an unequal society. So the energy which New Zealand has used has not trickled down to the poor. And we come on to the next slide. What I'm saying here is that you can't maximise both energy use and the environment. There is a law, basic law in physics, which says that when you use energy, you have to degrade the environment, and that will be a problem when you get close to the limits to growth. That is, once mankind's or humanity's energy use gets close to what the environment can absorb, then you get problems, and that's clearly happening in the terms of climate change. And in terms of climate change, I suggest that world governments should prioritise what's happening, and the priority should be in the form of reducing carbon dioxide emissions and changing from fossil fuels to renewables. And unless those two priorities happen, then the economic problems due to declining oil supplies in particular are going to have very dire economic consequences. And instead of meeting these two objectives, the government is going in the exact opposite direction. It's trying to increase growth, increase energy consumption. It's just not going to happen. And some of you might remember this cartoon from some time back. Not this one. This is just more growth. The next slide looks at the strategy structure. The strategy outlines 12 areas of focus, the first being developing petroleum and mineral fuel resources, and the last being greenhouse gas emissions. And I find these priorities completely around the wrong way. And this is the slide I mentioned earlier, the one that was in the media in New Zealand a bit earlier. I think it was last year when oil was up around $147 a barrel. But essentially the strategy moves in the direction of assisting the oil companies and assisting their profits rather than assisting the New Zealand people. Okay, so that's the ideological bit. The next bit is looking at an analysis of the strategy in more detail. Here I'm using an outline which comes partly from a book by Carl Malan called Renewable Energy Policy and Politics, but also in a paper which I wrote on, in fact, hot water. Solar hot water systems and solar hot water policy in New Zealand. And the lines there give some headlines for what a good policy should have. It should have well-defined objectives, adequate resources, transparency, etc. In terms of the present policy, there are almost no well-defined objectives in the document, except for the 90% renewable policy, which was, in fact, a policy of the previous government. And in fact, in the present document, this objective has been relegated to an aspirational goal rather than a real goal. That is, it's a high desire to achieve it, but it's somewhat lacking in conviction. In terms of what IPEN said about the 90% target, New Zealand did have a 90% renewable energy supply in 1981. In fact, it was 91.4%. So clearly the goal was achievable. Their analysis in terms of the engineering and what can come on stream at what time presupposes growth at about 2% per annum. My opinion is unlikely that growth is likely to eventuate. There is another commitment to the Warm Homes Program, and there is an attached dollar value, but there is no goal in terms of outcomes. That is, the government doesn't look at reducing either fuel poverty or improving indoor environments. All they're doing is throwing money at the problem and hoping it will go away. In terms of adequate resources and technology, the resources are nowhere adequately detailed. There are no numbers quoted for either existing fossil fuel resources or renewable resources. The policy uses phrases such as extensive coal resources, and it uses a mix of renewables, including wind and geothermal. no detailed analysis of priorities quantifying either the renewables or the fossil fuels. In terms of transparency and partiality, the strategy is transparent in that you can clearly see what the government's doing, but it's clearly partial to vested interests in the fossil fuel industry and to big business who favour economic growth